Support for agricultural information on WILL comes from Busey. With over 145 years of agribusiness experience, Busey's team is committed to providing resources to today's producers. Busey, your dream, our promise.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for Thursday, August 7th, 2014. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker, CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing in Windsor, Illinois. In agricultural news, Russia has slapped trade sanctions on U.S. agriculture. We'll have that and other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason reports that it's unlikely that federal crop insurance will be much of a safety net this growing season. And we'll have the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support for this market report comes from Country Financial, providing generations of Central Illinois farmers with crop hail insurance programs for individual producers, immediate family member, or tenant-landlord relationships. More information is available from your local Country Financial representative or at country-crop.com.
Let's see how futures settled on this Thursday afternoon. Hard red winter September wheat settled at 646 and a quarter down 10. December 659 and three quarters down 9. Soft September wheat settled at 561 and a half down 6 and a half. December 579 down 7 and three quarters. September corn settled at 359 and a half down 3 and three quarters. December 371 and a quarter down 3. March 384 and a quarter down 2 and three quarters. July 399 and a quarter down 2 and a half. August soybeans settled at 1250 up 13. September 10.99 and a quarter up 2 and three quarters. November 10.78 down 2. August soybean meal settled at 390.60 up 2.60. September 364.10 up 3.10. August soybean oil settled at 35.62 down 17. September 35.70 down 16. August live cattle settled at 155.55 down $3. August feeders also down $3 at 218.32 and a half. August lean hogs 115.17 and a half down 122 and a half. And those are today's settlements from the Chicago Board of Trade.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Linner's weather highlights, he says a little less rain is advertised today in portions of the northern Midwest, and some crops will need greater rain later this month to ensure crop stress does not increase and yields do not decline. Areas from eastern North Dakota to east central South Dakota and Minnesota to parts of northern Iowa, Michigan, and portions of northeastern Illinois will see the least rain through the next 2 weeks and will be most vulnerable to increasing levels of stress. However, a combination of favorable subsoil moisture and seasonable to cooler than usual temperatures should limit stress to crops during the next 2 weeks. Soil moisture is greatest from Wisconsin into northeastern Illinois. Areas from eastern, east central, and northeastern South Dakota to southern Minnesota and parts of north central Iowa have the driest soil and should be the first to see increasing levels of stress if rain does not increase soon.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC, providing nationwide land auctions, farmland sales and management, and financial advice for agribusiness. Information on upcoming land auctions and offerings can be found at MurrayWiseAssociates.com.
You You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Dan Zwicker, CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Good afternoon, Dan.
Hi, Dave.
Well, August and September soybeans stand out like a sore thumb, as well as some of the front contract soybean meals. They bucked the trend today, finishing in the green. Why did they end up on the positive side?
Well, I still think there's questions about the balance sheet. I know we only got 3 weeks left of the marketing year, but when you look at the balance sheet that USDA traced out in July, that doesn't look like that's going to be realized. It doesn't look like we're going to import as many soybeans as what USDA has on the table, and we may end up exporting more soybeans. So rather than having a 140 million bushel ending stocks number like USDA published there on the July report, it may be closer down to 110, which would be very, very skinny inventories. In order to kind of get by, we're going to need to see some early harvested soybeans come in from the southern regions of the south, and that doesn't necessarily look like that's going to be the case. We understand that there will be some beans harvested maybe this third week of August, but we'll have to see how that goes. But the supply-demand table for old crop soybeans still remains very, very tight. Just today, even though it's unlikely that those beans will be shipped during the next 3 weeks, we sold another 3.5 million bushels of old crop soybeans. So our sales are, like 1695 or something like that, and USDA only has us exporting 1620. So there's a big spread there.
So should that then not also impact maybe as soon as next Tuesday when we get the WASDE numbers, new crop carryout on soybeans downward?
Well, that's going to be the question. My guess is, it all depends what kind of number USDA puts on it. I think that's what everybody's going to be watching the most probably is what kind of production number USDA is going to put on both corn and soybeans. But, yes, a lot of those beans that are sold for the current marketing year will probably be rolled on into the new crop year. And then when you add that to the beans that we've already sold, it does lay the groundwork that exporters should be fairly aggressive buyers of soybeans during the first part of the marketing year, September, and that may last on in October. So depending upon how harvest goes, what the farmer's attitude is towards selling soybeans, that could probably be the most interesting twist probably in the market yet for the bull to kind of work out. Everything else looks like the bear's gonna pretty well have it, at least at this point.
All right, let's look at the technicals, and let me ask you a general question. What are the technicals trying to tell us from the activity over the last 2 to 3 weeks going forward?
Well, the trend is still down, but you would probably have to say on soybeans, we've shifted at least November soybeans to something more sideways. We're more in a 10.50, 11.20 type range. We've had a couple highs here, 11.18 and three quarters and 11.16 and a half. And we've had a couple lows here around 10.55 and 10.58. And at the moment we're in the lower half of the price range, but we finished the day here at 10.78. So it does indicate that the overall trend maybe in soybeans has shifted to something more sideways, at least for now, until we see an official production number that would be larger than maybe what the trade is trading. We did have a nice daily reversal to the upside on Monday. That has now followed through. The markets have exceeded that high after we had an inside day on Tuesday. Then we came back, had higher day yesterday, and today again was more of a consolidation with just a minor lower close in November. The front months did close higher. So price action probably in soybeans is generally supportive. If we could close out the week higher, then that might go a long ways and maybe saying that the November bean prices down in this 1050s is a double bottom for right now, and the market could go back and visit the upper end of the range, which would be in the 1110s and maybe even pop those highs out by a few pennies.
Do you think that we're coming close to a fairly volatile move one way or another?
Well, I don't know if it'd be volatile, but I think we're probably in the, I mean, I guess I don't want to, I guess volatile still remains in the question until you get through your first case report. But unless there's a shocker in USA's report, I think November soybeans have basically shifted sideways for now. And I think these late August rains or early September rains definitely need to come. And listening to your forecast on what Drew Lerner was thinking, it looks like a major portion of the Midwest may miss some of these August rains. Mm-hmm. And August is the month that I always view where you add bushels or you subtract bushels from end of July crop condition reports. And my guess is that we're subtracting bushels. To what extent, we can argue about that probably till the cows come home. But until USA gives us a September number or an October number with maybe revised acres and all that kind of stuff, we're really not going to know how big this crop really is. Combines really need to roll, and we need to hear you know, what we're hearing from the combine monitor, if they're going to be the big ones or if it's just going to be kind of an average crop in here on soybeans.
Thank you very much, Dan.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises, and he is in Mandeville, Louisiana.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
In agricultural news, some U.S. agriculture sectors will be hit harder than others by a one-year ban on agriculture imports into Russia. The ban was announced Wednesday as a retaliatory measure in response to economic sanctions by the U.S. and other Western countries due to ongoing military unrest in Ukraine. In all, U.S. ag exports to Russia amount to about $1 billion a year. The ban is most likely to hit U.S. shipments of soybeans, pork, chicken, and nuts. U.S. meat and poultry exports to Russia totaled about $329 million last year. U.S. soybean exports to Russia last year were valued at about $157 million. Russia officials say that the government has fully banned imports of meat, fish, milk, and milk products, and fruit and vegetables from the U.S., the European Union, Australia, Canada, and Norway. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack says that USDA will not be able to allow farmers to adjust their actual production history this year. A provision in the new farm bill is supposed to make it possible for farmers to update their actual production history to exclude years in which their yields are more than 50% below the 10-year average for their county. But Vilsack says the work on the APH has to be done by the same USDA officials in the Farm Service Agency and the General Counsel's office who are focused on broader Farm Bill implementation issues. Vilsack said it was more important to roll out the Stacked Income Protection Program, the Supplemental Coverage Option Insurance Program, as well as two new commodity programs, Price Loss Coverage and Agricultural Risk Coverage. European Union and Canadian negotiators have concluded discussions on their Comprehensive Economic and Trade Agreement, meaning that the bilateral deal is one step closer to implementation. Once CETA is formally signed, the agreement must be ratified by parliaments on both sides. Once in force, the agreement will rapidly eliminate duties on agricultural and food products, mostly from day one. By the end of the transitional periods, which vary from sector to sector, Canada and the EU will liberalize 92.8% and 93.5% of tariff lines in agriculture, respectively. Wendy's says that its second quarter earnings more than doubled. Wendy's reported earnings of $29 million, or 8 cents a share, up from $12.2 million, or 3 cents a share a year earlier. Revenue fell 20% to $523.4 million because of lost revenue from company-owned locations following the sale of restaurants. But the lower company-owned store count helped cut down operating expenses, and they fell 23%. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. It is not very likely farmers will collect big checks, if any at all, from their federal crop insurance this season. Todd Gleason has more on how producers can go about forward figuring the possibilities.
You don't buy insurance expecting it to pay out, but when faced with a loss, you might be hopeful. This year, despite the really good growing conditions, farmers in the Midwest might be hopeful their crop insurance purchase will limit the financial pain they appear to be facing. That probably will not be the case, says University of Illinois Extension agronomist Gary Schnitke.
Well, this year, the corn projected price is $4.62, which was set back in February. And the harvest price, which will determine guarantees, will be set in October against the December 2014 price. Right now, that December 2014 contract, Chicago Mercantile Exchange contract's trading right at $3.70, which is 80% of $4.62. So you're sort of in the money if you bought a 85% coverage level, but that assumes that you haven't had a higher yield than you typically do. And in fact, if you're at that 85% coverage level on a 370 price, all you need is a 6% higher yield and you won't be getting an insurance payment. And you would expect many, many yields to be above 6%, 6% higher than the trend-adjusted APH yield this year.
Here's a simple calculation to figure when a payment will be made.
Calculation is just simply calculate the guarantee that you have, and which be your coverage level, 462 projected price times your trend-adjusted APH yield, and then divide that by whatever projected price you're looking at. So 370, take that, divide it by 370. That gives you the yield that you have to be below to trigger an insurance payment.
Here's the other shoe that might fall. Even if yield drops a little bit, it does not become any more likely a crop insurance payment will be made for corn. Schnitke says those taking the area crop insurance products that include 90% coverage are the most likely to have payments triggered. Also, right now he says there isn't any reason at all to believe crop insurance payments will be made for soybeans. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing in Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon, Matt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
You getting some R&R over there at the state fair?
Oh, it's not too bad. You know, we don't show, we kids are in showmanship today and then show the next couple of days, so they're excited to be here.
Let's talk a little bit about the crop, and I'm beginning to wonder, and I know traders may begin to wonder as we get a little bit into further into the growing season, whether or not we might actually have seen the largest crop that we're going to hear from this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting. We've had some big estimates thrown out. Obviously, conditions were excellent in parts of the country this year to grow, you know, as good a corn as what a guy could grow. But it's going to be interesting. As we talked before we got on the air, it could come in awful late in places. Frost could become a concern for some people. Mm-hmm. And guys aren't going to want to dry a lot of corn whenever it's, you know, coming out of the field 330, 340 corn, so, or lower. It's going to be tough to pay for drying. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting fall. But, yeah, it's going to be a pretty good-sized crop.
Yeah, that's the point. I keep thinking that there might be, even with a glut of corn coming on, there might be some quick-ship corn premiums under the ideas that farmers aren't going to want to dry down and old crop corn won't get you there.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point, Dave. I mean, we're sitting right now at our elevator there in central Illinois where we have a quick ship basically first half of August bids and last half bids for cash on both corn and beans. And so I know a couple of the processors have really been hunting corn here recently. For beans, for instance, you're looking at a 37-cent drop, you know, if beans are sold in the last half of August versus the first half. So, I mean, that's a big difference.
Another thing that producers are going to have to remember how to do is play the carry game. That's something we haven't done in a few years.
Yeah, definitely going to have to be watching carry. You know, you got to watch basis closely. I know if a guy has cash needs this fall, if he doesn't want to go ahead and sell, if nothing else, he may lock the basis in. You know, with a big crop, or perceived really big crop, you know, it's tough to think you're going to get a huge rally. But by all means, you definitely cannot expect basis once you get harvest started on a crop this size to do anything but get weaker.
What kind of advice are you telling producers who have now thought they were pretty well sold up, but because of the size of the crop are no longer sold up?
You know, if a producer is in a situation where he's already hedged a fair amount ahead of time, and if he's in anywhere where production is good, then I got to give him a pat on the back, because I think he's going to be okay with selling a few bushels significantly lower than his hedged bushels. But the real problem that, you know, the guys that are really worrying, I guess, the most are guys that haven't sold anything. And in that situation, you know, it's probably something where a guy's going to have to maybe sell a little bit to meet his cash need. And then, like you say, play the carry game and maybe do a little bit of storage, especially on the farm. And hope that we get a little bit of a rally here after the first year.
All right. Why don't we go ahead and get your bids today, please?
Our cash bid on corn is 355. The second half would be 349, and then 341 for fall corn. Beans 1224, and then that 1187 for the second half, and then 1052 for fall.
Thank you very much, Matt.
Thanks, Dave.
Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing, and he is in Windsor, Illinois. In 2 minutes, I'll be back with a look at agricultural weather with Mike Tenura of T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. It's National Raspberries and Cream Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1782, Andreas Sigmund Margraf died, a German chemist. He discovered beet sugar, which led to the development of the modern sugar industry. In 1783, John Heathcote was born, an English inventor. He developed and patented the lace net machine, which was capable of the complex and yet delicate motions needed to produce lace. His machines made lace hundreds of times faster than it could be manufactured by hand. In 1794, on this day, marks the Whiskey Rebellion. protesting the 1791 federal tax on distilled spirits. A large gathering of rebels in western Pennsylvania burned the regional tax inspector's home. President George Washington ordered 13,000 troops to the area, but by the time of their arrival, the opposition had disappeared. And in 1834, Joseph Marie Jacquard died, a French silk weaver. He was the inventor of the Jacquard programmable power loom for brocaded fabric. His use of punch cards was later applied to census data and eventually input cards in early computers. And that's this day in agricultural history. Listening to the Closing Market Report, this is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for our look at agricultural weather is meteorologist Mike Tenura of T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, Mike.
Hi, Dave.
Well, I think that what people have a high degree of interest in is actually weather over the next 24 to 48 hours. What can you tell us?
Well, it is a key event for the U.S. growing season. There's no doubt about that. We do have significant rainfall that's been occurring over the last couple of days in parts of the western Corn Belt, and now that has moved into Illinois. Once we go over the next 1 to 2 days, we'll see the area of rain continue to move to the east and the east-southeast, ultimately having aided the southern half of Illinois, southern portions of Indiana and Ohio, and much of the northern delta, including some of the drier areas of Kentucky and into Tennessee. So that area there will see significant rainfall over the next 1 to 2 days. One of the big questions that we have, and it's an important question, regards what happens further to the north. There's an array of evidence that shows that significant rainfall is fairly unlikely as you head to the north. We're talking about areas to the north of Champaign-Urbana, and then stretching into the northern areas of the Corn Belt. What that means is that we'll have seen a situation where we have a large group of haves and a large group of have-nots as far as rainfall for this week and as far as corn and soybeans go. So it's a little bit of a complicated situation, with some areas certainly having benefited from rainfall this week and some areas certainly having not benefited. So that'll be something we'll have to watch, and it makes the weather forecast for next week fairly important, too.
And as you look at that forecast, what are some of the features you can share?
Well, on the plus side, we're not looking for any heat. This has been one of the cooler periods in recent history for the central U.S. in July and into August, and it looks like that will continue next week. A fairly strong cool front does move on through the region from Sunday through Monday. We would like to see that front develop heavy rainfall, but it doesn't look like that will be the case. The real problem is that we have an easterly flow situated across the Great Lakes region, and that's pulling in cool and dry air from Canada into the Corn Belt. So when this front comes in from the west, it essentially runs into air that's already fairly cool, and that's not a good setup to produce heavy rainfall. So again, the plus side for next week is that temperatures do stay cool. The downside is that we're now looking for a lot of rainfall. That could change once we get in toward next Friday and then going forward through the middle of August, say beginning around August 15th and through the 20th. That is a period of interest for rainfall, but it's still 8 to 10 days away, and the setup doesn't look quite ideal at this point, but we'll probably be wanting that situation to turn into a heavy rain event for some areas.
Do you look for potential for near normal to above normal temperatures into late August?
At this point, it's hard to forecast that far out, but if you just look at what's happened over the last 6 weeks and you look at the next 1 to 2 weeks, where the temperature forecast is fairly straightforward, we have a real hard time getting too excited about any heat anytime soon, simply based on the recent history of having no heat and not really having a good reason to start forecasting it now.
Thank you very much, Mike.
You're welcome, Dave. Have a good day.
Mike Tenura of T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. And that is today's closing market report. This is Dave Dickey.